I presented this case to really get into the key question I have here today, representing general medical oncologists and also patients, Johanna, which is this would be an example of looking for a needle in a haystack and finding a pretty good one.
Yeah.
If it really plays out that way, of course, this is a very dramatic example. We're going to talk in a second about some of the data we got in the survey we did at 77 oncologists, but I just want to get all of your take right now, and then we'll come back at the end and see after we go through all this, do we still all feel the same way? Is it worth it? You know, I mean, I don't want to get exactly into a cost-benefit thing, but when you look at cost-benefit, it's always the issue about the value. You know, what's the benefit? Then you can look at the cost. And I think it also has to be taken in context with a lot of the other expenditures that we make, which, whether that's right or not, I don't know, but it's a reality. So, Johanna, is it worth it to be looking for needles in the haystack like this?
I think yes, but I don't know that I would say in the process of looking for the needle in the haystack. It is for some of the needles in the haystack, and you've heard me say before, catching an NTRK fusion. It's like winning the Powerball, right? Very rare, but if you hit it, it's amazing.
And we saw a bunch of these in the survey.
Yeah.
NTRK fusions that were treated.
Yeah, and this gentleman as well. And I think where some of the benefit lies is not only for the individual patient, right, to be profiled and actually learn to see what are potential driver mutations, what are potential actionable mutations with approved therapies or potential clinical trials in the future, but I also think for the population as a whole, because a lot of the data that we have on mutations and fusions and expressions all come from, for instance, TCGA, which is all off of primary tumors when the patients are first diagnosed. What happens to patients' tumors along the way? We've seen multiple examples where we might accumulate mutations or develop fusions, and I still think we don't really understand what happens with those patients' tumors as they go and what might be potential actionable things that happen along the way. So I think in the terms of the broader population, where we have a lot of these large real-world evidence databases that are also encompassing the molecular profiles that are done both at baseline and longitudinally, if we're able to aggregate that data and take a look at that data in conjunction with how patients are doing, I think that that might give us even more information on how to potentially approach treating patients' cancers as a whole. And what I mean is benefiting the whole population of patients with cancer.
So we'll actually look and see how this is playing out. I was very surprised, and actually in our survey, how many people actually responded to PARP inhibitors, breast and prostate, how many people with MSI they found. You know, like you said, NTRK fusions, there are a bunch of them there. So I don't know, Ian, you know, I have to admit, probably people would be surprised. I'm kind of a super closet skeptic about stuff, including targeted therapy, because, you know, it's great, but is it going to really end up curing people? I don't know. You know, what are we achieving with this at a human level? Sure, it's great to see a partial response, but I want to be convinced. Cases like this are pretty helpful, though. Any thoughts about this?
No, I mean, I think a healthy degree of skepticism is appropriate here. You know, there's the natural inclination for all of us. We have a new technology. Well, of course, we're going to use it. And, you know, I think that's not the best use of resources. It's not the best thing for patients. And we have to be skeptical about it. But it was interesting that a couple years ago at San Antonio breast cancer meetings, there was a big debate, you know, a staged debate on whether we should be doing some type of gene sequencing on all patients with metastatic breast cancer. And, you know, two very accomplished faculty members were presenting, and really it was hard for the person on the pro side to make a compelling argument that back in 2017, we should be doing sequencing on everybody because there were very few examples, at least in breast cancer, in which patients found something that led to a therapeutic benefit. But I think that that's changing. I think partly because the number of needles is increasing. You know, as we get more targeted therapies, there's more chance that if we find a particular, you know, niche population of a mutation in a patient, that you can actually do something about that. And clearly the number of targeted therapies is increasing. So I think that's going to help. And I think kind of get data from You know, to me, this is a great opportunity for real-world data because, you know, typically we use these drugs as monotherapies, so it's easier to figure out what something's working than when you, you know, use three different chemotherapies plus a targeted therapy. We're using these as monotherapies. A lot of times when the drugs work, they actually have objective responses as opposed to, you know, stable disease. So I do think this is an opportunity for there to be some collection of real-world data to start looking at these populations, because it's so hard to do in the setting of a basket trial when these things are so rare that, you know, I think this is an opportunity. But again, I think skepticism is important. We're clearly, you know, this particular case is really good for that patient, but it's by far the minority right now. But, you know, I think it's certainly there's lots of opportunity for advancing this. And again, as the more targeted therapies become available, it's going to make it easier.